This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Welcome to Unapologetically Bold, I'm Not Sorry For. If you are a person that is tired of apologizing for being you, you know, the human part of you that sometimes feels like it has to be different at home versus work versus play, the human side that just wants to be hot, humble, open, and transparent about your wants, desires, and uniqueness. If you answered yes, this is for you. Join me, Emily Elrod, as I dive into conversations with amazing guests about what they are not sorry for in creative and loving ways. Let's get started. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Unapologetically Bold, I'm Not Sorry For. And I'm blessed today to have my friend here, Harry. Welcome, Harry.
It's great to be here, Emily. What is the good word?
Yes. I am so pumped for this conversation, for people to get to learn more about you and also get to have a fun and real conversation between two people about something that I think is important. So let's get into it, Harry. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Oh, where do I begin, Emily? I'm going to keep this less than 4 hours, I promise. The thing about what I do is it's all about helping people. So I started out really just doing mission work in my early 20s, and in my mid 30s, I got into sales because I really only knew how to speak with people and I was a pretty good listener. And that started my sales career. And from there, I've just really blossomed into sales leadership, which is all about helping teams. So that's really my passion, is helping others. So somehow along the way, my background being in the mission work, people have once or twice said, "Harry, you are too nice." Mm-hmm. And so I've had to put on this alter ego, which I never was comfortable with. So when you came across, when we came across paths here and you said, "Well, you're not sorry for being too nice. We got to talk about that." I said, "Okay, I think I can talk about that." So,
and that's
me in a nutshell.
Yes, and let's grab and just go on and dive into it. You're not sorry for being too nice, which at exactly. first is like something where you were like, "Oh, why do you need to be sorry?" But in the game of sales, it's very typically known as being cutthroat.
Right. Yeah.
So talk about that for a minute on why you're not sorry for being too nice.
Yeah. So it really stemmed from when I first started interviewing for sales jobs. People found mm-hmm. out that I was a minister. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't be able to tolerate bad language in mm-hmm. the sales bullpen. So I changed, right? I started using bad language myself because I had to blend in. Mm-hmm. Second thing was, when I got into sales leadership, or I wanted to get into sales leadership, the president of the company I worked for said, "No, Harry won't make it. He's just too nice. You need someone really to step on someone's throat and be nasty when they need to be nasty." Mm-hmm. So when I got the job the first time to be in sales leadership, I had this alter ego. And I remember distinctly to this day, and we're talking 15, almost 20 years later, a rep who worked with me knew me before I was a manager and mm-hmm. then knew me when I was a manager. And she said, "You know what? I liked you more when you were a sales rep." And mm-hmm. that cut me, right? Because mm-hmm. I thought I was the same person, but I became a jerk because mm-hmm. I had to be, you know, a little nastier. And yeah. And I don't recommend that. I learned my lesson. That's not good.
And I think there's a fine line too, where we say nice. And what I usually mean, because that's the proverbial word that most people say, is that you're too nice. But it's also nice and kind are two different words. And I feel like that's really where you were, is nice sometimes feels like a pushover, or you can't, but kindness is where you're still honest. Kindness is next to whatever and also here it is, knowing you that I do, it's love, that you were okay to show people that you were honest, but you're going to be patient with them. You're going to not scream and yell. So whenever you had to be that total reverse, especially coming from the side of ministry, how did that make you feel?
Yeah, so it was tough. And I appreciate you distinguishing between nice and kind, because kind does mean to tell the person that they've got stuff in their teeth, right? Mm-hmm. You've got the spinach in your teeth, mm-hmm. And you're doing them a good deed. And do I have spinach in my teeth, by the way? No. I think I'm good. I think I'm good right now. I double checked. So where was I before that? But so it was really a challenge. And I'll honestly say that I did not fit in with the culture of the sales bullpen, because some of my fellow managers were screamers. Mm. So they would scream at reps, and I'm like, is that the way I'm supposed to be? So I adopted that, believe it or not, and it wasn't me, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was not sleeping. I said, let me just go back into sales. So that was my first go around into sales leadership. But then I came back into it because I knew I was good at it. I just had to do things in the Harry Spate fashion, right? Mm-hmm. Which was, be the nice guy, be fun loving, pat people on the back, not scold and verbally abuse people. But, just to have conversations with my team, right? Mm-hmm. And if someone was having a bad month, I wasn't going to berate them in front of others. That was just, then that's what people were doing. And it's just nonsensical. I mean, have you ever experienced anything like that?
Oh, yes, I have. It makes me think of a time whenever I was in a meeting with a group, with the HR group, and one of the people just started berating me over something that was just nonsense. And then another person, and it was almost like these bullies, they all like swarmed on top and because they saw their chance.
Wow.
And it was just so interesting at that time. And I told them during that meeting, because I'm not a very emotional person, but that I teared up. I'm like,
sure.
Why?
You're ganged up on, right?
Yeah. It took me by surprise. I'm like, why did you not tell me this 3 months ago? Why didn't you say that again? Yeah. And one-on-one, why did you wait? Right.
Yeah.
It was almost in the total, it's almost 6 months later after it had already, things have already been done, that you're just now going to bring this to my attention. And I think that's important to what you were talking about earlier, is about doing things based on what you saw. And so there was one ringleader, and then there were two people that just did what their boss did.
Yeah.
And they did what they saw. And I actually had a conversation with somebody the other day, and I think this is something I want to talk to you about, is basically the conversation goes around that whenever you get into leadership, you have to be stoic. You have to be like this hero size person that you can't show your vulnerabilities because it may hurt you to get to the next level, or you have to be this certain person because that's how everybody else has been, and that's how they got up the ladder. And what I hear on yours is the first time, one, you realized, hey, this is not good for my health, but two, I can't do it this way. I don't want to do it this way. So talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, that's such a fascinating topic on the types of leadership styles. So, there's a great book, that really opened up my eyes, because I thought there was a few leadership styles. I didn't realize there were so many and how people can evolve along the way. But what you're describing frequently is the authoritarian style leader, right? They have no emotion. We do things my way around here. You don't question the boss. If you do, then the boss is going to face that as a challenge or view it as a challenge. And I just never liked those types of people, right? So I was, coming from that background where I was serving others, I thought, doing it my way, I don't care if I get promoted.
Yeah.
Right? It's just before I felt like I had to act a certain way, and that really wasn't me. When you walked in the room, no smiles. I'm walking in the room, I'm cracking jokes, right? I'm cutting up. right? I'm having fun and I'm saying things like, what's the good word, right? I enjoy life, right? And you don't see that in an executive level meeting typically. So I like to change the game, and there's a spot for me, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, some organizations, they're going to go with the authoritarian style, and then others are going to say, you know, we want the servant guy, right? We want the people that's serving others and helping people, because that's our culture. And so that's where I fit in with those types of cultures. And you too, right? I mean, are you the type of person that I know you're not looking for a job, but say you were looking for a job and you have this responsibility, I could tell right away. I mean, you started with prayer and it's like, you know, you're humble, and humility and leadership, they really should be synonymous. I mean, they should be working together. Humility, when you're in leadership, you recognize your own flaws, right? And when you recognize your own flaws, then you can really help others. And, you know, so I'm going to ask you this. When you see a leader that says, hey, you go do this, you go do it, right? And I'm here if you need me. Mm-hmm. Versus the leader says, let's go do this together. Mm-hmm. Right? Who would you rather be with?
I like the one that will let me do it, like, together, you know?
Yeah. And why is that?
I love relationships. That's my thing. And in building and growing with one another, community.
Yeah. And especially if you like when that person then gives you the credit that you did everything. Even better, right? Right? When the leader who has helped you doesn't say we, but uses she and he did it, then those people will, in my opinion, run through a wall of fire for you.
And that's what I've seen with my teams, or my team specifically. There's like, I always talk about how one of my teammates, her name's Bonnie, she's been on the show as well, like, she keeps me sane, and I always say, if it was not for her, half the stuff wouldn't be as good as it is. Or John, or Emily, or Dominique, like any of them. Like, I am nowhere. You've got an email from me, and I don't know if you read the comment below it, but what it says is, the kiss of death is to be the genius with 10,000 helpers, instead be the genius with 10,000 geniuses. And that's truly what I believe I have, is those geniuses. But here's the thing. I didn't realize this until I went through hell and high water. And I had a leader who was more of a boss.
Yeah.
Told you what to do.
Sure.
Directed you. And then jokingly, because it was a joke, he took all the credit.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
And I'm just like.
That builds up tons of loyalty, doesn't it?
I'm like, I know you're joking. And he's like, haha, just a joke. And I'm like, but you didn't say who did it. You know, like you get, and those were the things that I found for me that were very frustrating at times, because great person, but in the end, that's the thing too, is he was a very nice human, but whenever it came to work, it was a different switch in that. And I think that's what I want to talk about too in leadership. There's a difference between it being a nice human just in general and a nice and kind and loving leader. Because you can have nice people, and that you usually can keep your job a lot longer, what I found, but you might not get some results if you don't have the leadership side of it.
Yeah. I mean, so two things. One, just going back to the person that is joking, there's always, I mean, ask any comic, right? There's always a measure of truth. There's some measure of truth in the joke. It comes from somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, people have egos, and it is so hard to let go of the ego. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time. I'm not a kid anymore. I still struggle with the ego, right? When I know I have done something that really made a situation a whole lot better, do I want to take credit for it? Absolutely. Do I want to pat on the back once in a while? Of course I do. Mm-hmm. But it's the better reward is to give it to someone else, right? Let them get it. I mean, I heard one bright guy once, and I read it somewhere, He says there's greater happiness in giving than in receiving. I think I'm not sure if that's familiar to you, but right. Let me ask you, have you ever been in a situation where you see someone maybe with their kids and their kids are jumping all over the place? Maybe they're in someone else's home and the parents are just completely oblivious and the kids are using the master bedroom as a trampoline. Right. And so you look at the parents and you say, well, they're so nice. They're not saying anything, but you know, they probably should say something, right? The people in the home should probably say, yes, we're nice people, but you shouldn't use our bed as a trampoline for your 8-year-old, right?
Exactly.
That would be the thing to do. And when you see something like that, you say, you need to say something, right? I mean, it's just, it's awkward that people are so nice that they don't say something. You feel like you need to say it for them. And sometimes you do, right? So that's a simple example, but you get the idea, right? Or it could happen in a restaurant, whatever. Well, in leadership, I've seen it where people are complete pushovers. Mm-hmm. And there's a real danger, let's be honest. So the idea of when someone started lying to me, and I can think of a sales rep who would lie all the time. And I kept believing him. And I said, okay, so that was a lie. And so he started counting the lies and he said, you know what? This person now has a history of lying to me. Mm-hmm. And so I stopped believing anything he said. I stopped believing, right? So he made his own bed, so to speak. And so, yes, I was the nice guy. He took advantage of me for a while, right? Mm-hmm. But that limit, when it reached the limit, I then said, you know, I don't believe you anymore. Mm-hmm. And then one day he called and he said, I'm late for work because my car broke down here on the highway and I'm calling a tow truck. And I said, you know what? Bring me the receipt from the tow truck. And then he said, you know what? I'm going to quit. So he quit on the spot because, you know, the lying shenanigans were over and he was, you know, I called him out on it. So if I was a nice guy, I could have just put up with that for who knows how much longer, and I wasn't doing anyone any favors. So that to me is the difference, right? Mm-hmm. You can be nice, but just don't be taken advantage of.
And I think that's very important because I see some of my loved ones that are also not only just in leadership, but also in life, that it's almost more of a people pleasing aspect. Yeah. And that they don't want to have those uncomfortable conversations because they don't want to upset somebody. And it makes me think of a time,
right,
whenever I had to tell my son that, and this is, I would say, pretty dramatic, that this is definitely a difficult conversation. It really was one of the hardest. Whenever I had to tell my son that he was adopted.
Yeah.
And so he was 5 years old. And I just remember I'd cried and cried for years, like even before he was like born, like even being pregnant. I'm like, I'm going to have to tell him, you know, like that his dad is not actually his dad. You know, mm-hmm. How are you going to take this?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my God, I can't.
Yeah.
And then I finally got up enough. I'm going to tell him because you know what he said? He goes, oh, mama, I guess that's the reason why I'm white, not white, dark.
And I think he dealt with it a whole lot better than you dealt with it, right?
Exactly. But that's the thing, is nice people sometimes I feel like we make these stories in our head that are so far off and so far bad because maybe we might have experienced a hard conversation that went, somebody just did bad, or it was a conversation that just went south really quick. And those come to mind and you feel like that's going to be resurfaced, you know, and it's not.
Yeah.
And so like even asking the guy for a receipt, it makes me think of that trust but verify, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of aspect.
Absolutely. And I don't know if I got it from that, but I'm a huge believer in the trust but verify line. So the idea of what you said about your son, I mean, you don't want to disappoint people, mm-mm, right? You don't want to let people down. So people like us who don't want to let people down, have a hard time with those crucial conversations, right? Mm-hmm. It's, you got to have them. And if you ignore it, time goes by and what happens?
Mm.
It gets worse, right?
It does.
Yeah. And then it's why didn't you tell me sooner? Then you have that conversation.
Yep.
Sort of like what you're saying was, I find interesting when the earlier conversation, when you're in the conference room and, you know, everyone was ganging up on you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe something was triggered and person felt more comfortable because someone said something and then they jumped on you,
mm-hmm.
because now it was a safe tree for them, not mm-hmm. for you, right? But for them.
Yep.
And so that's when they started piling on. But really good leadership, someone would have pulled you aside and had the difficult conversation. And it probably wasn't that difficult for most people, but some people just can't deal with it. They're, and that's where nice is not always good, right? It's, mm-hmm. you've got to be kind, right? And I love, and I'm getting that from you. I'm plagiarizing you because that's great wisdom.
But I think it's true. It's the, there's a big difference in it. And also, but the, what we usually hear is a nice guy. And what I've heard in the past is nice guys finish last.
Yeah.
And so I think that's important to say and talk about how being nice, how spending time with people, how seeing them as humans actually doesn't end you in last place. Typically it puts you in the front of the line. So I want to talk about that for a minute.
Yeah. So I love it. I mean, because that is just the old adage, nice guys finish last, is, I mean, it was written by the mafia. I mean, I don't know who came up, coined that phrase, but it's not true. And I can say that I'm very competitive, right? Mm. I'm nice, kind, and I think my family would agree with those statements. I'm not just saying that because I want to, you know, fake myself out. But I'm competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And in the sense that I don't know what drives the competition. When I was an athlete, and I use the term very loosely, but I did play at the high school golf team. And I grew up playing hockey. I was competitive, but I wasn't like I had to win. I wasn't that guy. But I wanted to be successful. And so when in business, and it's, we all have egos, right? So mm-hmm. in business, when once there was competition on the line for between sales teams, I looked at others and I'd say, well, they're not any better than my team,
mm-hmm.
right? And my team, we have camaraderie and we get along and we're treating people well. And, you know, I'm going to drive this to be the top team, right? Mm-hmm. So we started talking about, it's like, why can't we be the top team? And, you know, for a long time, I don't remember the exact, I'm not into that, but I mean, I remember that we were the number one team for their company out of six,
mm-hmm.
to the point where my sales leader took people off of my team and said, I need to strengthen the other teams and your quota is going up even though you're losing your top performers.
Mm-hmm.
And that would make me really mad, yep. right? And more competitive and say, guess what? I'll still be the top dog next year. And mm-hmm. that drove me, right? And so he played me for that because and looking back, he knew that was the way I was going to be. Mm-hmm. If he took it from someone else, they probably would have left, right? They probably would have quit. But he saw that I was competitive and wanted to win. But, you know, you still do that being nice, right? You don't have mm-hmm. to be a jerk to be competitive, right? You don't have to cut people off at the knees. You can be friendly competitive or friendly competition. And yeah. sort of like the whole state of politics today, right? I think it's a complete joke that people can't have conversations anymore. I mean, I don't want to go political here, but it's the same deal, right? Mm-hmm. We're different. You can have conversations. I may want to win. Doesn't mean I hate you. Exactly. Doesn't mean you're stupid. Doesn't mean that you need to die because you believe differently. I just wanted to win because of it feels better to win. That's exactly. all.
Exactly. And I think that's very important too, because that makes me think of another one that I won't go down the rabbit hole of, but somebody said is that my opinion is not debatable. I'm like, oh, but shouldn't it be? Like, let's just have everybody's opinion debatable. It's just us having a conversation. It's that we don't know how to have those tough conversations just to get to know each other more.
Right.
And I think that's the other part about being that competitive. I'm the one that does not let my kid win at Uno. And I have a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old.
Oh, so, you've got issues, lady.
I do. I'm so competitive. I call it, I am 4'10", so I call it my little girl syndrome. So with that, like, I love to win. I can't stand to lose. But in that, what I like of it is that it's a long game. Like, winning, you can have quick wins. But in sales and in life and in leadership, yes, there's quick wins, but those long wins have bigger returns on it. And so I love that you said that in a year, at least knowing that it's going to take a year or 2 years to be able to get back on top, you know, and not being unrealistic and saying, oh, I got this by next quarter, you know, because you can't demand that of people, but that's what people do that I know that are competitive. They're like, oh, okay, it worked for me exactly this way. You should do this exactly this way, and eliminating all their choice. And that is more of that directive of saying what you should do instead of going to, here's an invitation or here's a thought. Tell me what you think. How can we do this? Or how do you see it differently? How do we have a conversation around this?
Yeah, that's great. When you are talking about you surround yourself with other geniuses, what makes them geniuses?
They can contribute back and is really just I find their strengths and is really what mine is.
Yeah. So you see the strengths in other people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, the problem with a lot of leaders is that they think everyone's like them. Right. And
I will say that for a minute. They sometimes surround themselves with people that are yes men that are like them.
Yeah, that's true. But think of, do you follow sports at all?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so you probably heard of Michael Jordan.
Mm, yes.
He can't coach basketball, right? He can play basketball, but he can't coach basketball because people are not like Michael Jordan, right? And he had a real problem with that is that he just assumed people were like him, that everyone wanted to be their absolute best, right? And he would go crazy to be the best and went crazy when people did not follow his example, right? Larry Bird was another one. They're not good coaches. A lot of them, it's interesting that the ones who are not great players are better coaches because they can relate to the players better. The ones who are superstars typically struggle with coaching because they can't relate. They cannot relate to bad days, mediocrity, lack of industriousness and practice. And so when you look at sales leaders, typically they come out of sales. I mean, almost 100% of the time they come out of sales. They were a top performer and they never thought about anyone else. They only thought about themselves, and now they have a team and it's like, yeah, just do it. Just go do it like I did. I mean, and expect people to follow. But what you said about the geniuses is that they have their own strengths. So salespeople have their own strengths. We're not all alike. I mean, a lot of us are jerks. Let's get that out of the way. But in general, there are traits about us that people like, right? Some are great listeners. Some are great storytellers. Some will go the extra mile and pick up their phone at 2 o'clock in the morning and solve a problem, right? And others are, you know, there are different strengths. Different people do different things. So a good leader, well, shouldn't they recognize those different strengths and praise people and develop those strengths so that they become even better at what they do?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Does that make sense? Or what's your thought on that?
Yes, I love that. And that's what I love. We do some work on this. And what we say is there's people that typically talk about a problem. There's people that find a problem. There are people that will think about a problem. There are people that will do things about a problem. And in my role, I want to make, and each of these are strengths. Some people can do both. But in my role, I think about even the people that I have a guy named John. He has in the past, has a past of working for on suicide hotlines. You okay. think man can listen? He's the most empathetic listener, and he can hear.
Yeah.
And I have other ones that can find the problem. And they're just very creative in ways of addressing problems in ways that I might not think of. I'm typically the doer. I love to get things done.
Sure.
And so finding people that can do everything in those, what I found for my team is that it has made us more of a greater group together.
Yeah.
We all have somebody. And so that's what I think, too, of this is you have people that might be better with a certain client comparative to another. And it allows you to, as a leader or even at home, it allows you to deploy strengths of your people. Like one of my kids, literally today, me and Bonnie, we were working on an assessment that we were doing. And I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm overthinking this. I brought my 9-year-old in here and I said, hey, does this make sense?
Oh, my goodness.
And he's like, I don't know. I was like, okay, what is mommy saying? And he said it back like, oh, this is the reason I love you. Like anytime I'm overthinking things, I send it to him for him to simplify because he's a thinker.
Right.
He knows how to say it even at 9
years old. Oh my goodness. That's such a great, it's a great story.
Be able to do the work that is needed. So those are the things like it doesn't have to just be at work. It can also be at home that you can infuse the two.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny that reminded me of a person that was on my team who was loved to use like 5-syllable words, right? And my eyes would glass over, and he'd take a deep breath, and then he would just spew out these ridiculous words. And I said, "Dude, you need to speak like I'm in third grade, right?" If I can understand it as a third grader, then the prospects and clients will be able to understand you. But you're not bright by using huge words, right? 5-syllable words does not make you smarter.
Nope.
Right? It's just, it tells me you looked up something. That's, you know, it's not, anyway, but it's proof, right? Mm-hmm. That your 9-year-old can help you is just, it's beautiful.
Oh, well, thank you.
I love it.
I think that's a part going back to that being too nice or too kind. I hear people like, what? A lot of times whenever I say my kids are a lot of my editors, because for me, I want it to make it where people can understand it instead of I can give you huge words. I'm a nerd for
nerd for nouns, I heard, right?
Yes, I'm a nerd for nouns. For anything, people, places, and things, I can nerd out with you and how they work. And I can go deep in theory from a PhD level to all the way. But the thing is why?
Yeah.
Why whenever you can make it simple? Somebody told me this the other day, and it was Winston Churchill. And what he said is that it's slothful to use too many words in essence. And he was talking about how people would give him tons of work. And he's like, just narrow it down and give me one thing that helps me understand, like an executive.
Mm-hmm.
Overview of it.
Right.
And that's the thing that I feel like is a lot of times we can talk and talk and talk, but what if we can just narrow it down, keep it simple, the KISS method,
yeah,
keep it simple, silly, like let's just do that. And for me, my strength, I found my genius is my tongue. He's the one that can interpret my huge words and make it where it's like, okay. Okay. Yeah. And here's the interesting thing too, that I think is cool. What you talked about is, did you find where your, like, whenever you saw somebody with a strength, did you ever pair them up? Like as somebody that might.
Oh my God. Yes.
And seeing how they both can grow.
Oh my goodness. And it's so funny because sales is such a, lone wolf mentality, right? I mean, so, you know, the top performers are typically lone wolves frequently. They're not collaborators in general. But, you know, when you bring on a new person and you ask the lone wolf to show the new person the ropes, you know, they don't want to do it, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's like, look, they're messing with me. I don't have time for this. I'm a top producer. But if you say, look, whatever they find, you get to work and make some money, then it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. So I basically have a prospector or someone that's going to help me do errands or get rid of the stuff I don't want to do. And yes, I'll be happy to help that person. So I had to find why a lone wolf would want to work with others. But then the benefit of that is a newer person gets a lot of experience pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I loved it. And you know, just walking in, not coming from sales leadership and just saying, well, I'm hiring people. They don't know what the heck they're doing. I got these people that do know what the heck they're doing. Maybe I can put them together. I don't know if anyone's thought of this, but you know, the criticism I got, right? So I remember someone saying, well, you know, Harry's got this thing going where he's got people pairing up together. So now you've got two people doing the work of one person. So we're paying two people to do the work of one, right? So I said, well, get over it, right? Well, and let's just say the one person who is doing half the job or a third of the job wouldn't be doing any of the job if he wasn't or she wasn't with someone with the experience. They would be discouraged. They'd go to the mall. They'd go to a movie. You know, and these are all the stories of salespeople that just go to Starbucks and hang out all day and get on Facebook because they don't, you know, they don't have what they need, which is a story to tell, confidence, you know, wins, and they get all that by working with tenured people. So that's, yeah, I'm a huge believer in that. Sounds like you are too.
Yes. Yes, I am. I think it's very important, especially in the first 2 years in the growth phase of anybody doing anything. So to bring it all back around.
Is that possible?
Liz, we're going to try it.
All right. Well, you have the skills. Bring the 9-year-old in. I want to hear what he would say.
I know, right? So for people that are apologizing for being too nice, what would you tell them?
Yeah, so I'd get into it a little bit with them and say, as long as you are kind, as long as you know when to be, you know, to put an end if someone was taking advantage of you, as long as you know that line and you can put it to a stop, then people are just going to love you for being kind, right? And it's okay. And you can be successful. You can be a winner. You can be a top dog. But you can't be a person that just gets walked over. Right? Mm-hmm. You got to have spine. And I'm here in your corner. If you need me, I'd be happy to give you some tips on it. But yeah, it's what I live through. And I love it, right? It's helping others and being competitive don't have to be a contradiction.
Yes. And I think it's the one thing that I love. It's a breath of fresh air. It's like you get such negativity as is to walk in to see somebody just be nice and kind and to care. Wow. So I appreciate you for that, Harry. And for anybody that's listening to this and wants to reach out to you, where can they find you?
Well, the best thing is I'm on LinkedIn. So Harry Spate, and then also our Facebook group with my co-host of Lead, Sell, Grow. So we have a Lead, Sell, Grow Facebook group. And you'll find fellow salespeople. We try to give valuable guidance there. My co-host, Eric Konovalov. So that is probably the best place. And this has been a real blast. Emily, you're awesome. Mm-hmm. I love your stories. You know, there's a point where I actually got a chill about the person on the suicide line. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's to me is, you know, you're a godsend if you can do that type of work. And if you know, I don't know anyone that does that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, someone that does that. To me, it's like hats off to those people because, yeah, the world needs them, right?
Amen to that. Yeah. And that person specifically, John, he is a godsend. Like, his ability to live and you know, how much I can grow from, like, we were speaking a little bit from his tenure and his learning and his lessons and that and how much it has grown me as a human. So it's been just like this conversation, it has been such a blessing. Thank you so much. And thank you for all that will listen in. Have an awesome and blessed day.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Unapologetically Bold, I'm Not Sorry For. If this touched you in any way, please like and subscribe and share with your friends as we continue the message of being unapologetically bold by being hot humans who are humble, open, and transparent. See you next time.